In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue, Bangor. But they have a film for everyone in the family. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joins us in studio. Hello, Alan.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very fine. Yourself?
Oh, can't complain.
You had a good weekend.
It was all right. Yeah. No, it was pretty good. Sheridan was out of town, and so I was left to my own devices.
Oh, yeah. So how did your Marie Kondoization go?
You know, it went a good deal more smoothly than I was anticipating.
Sparked some joy?
I did. I spent a couple hours going through some stuff, wound up with, like, I don't know, 3 bags full of donations and 1 of trash. And
wow.
Like, and everything, like all of my clothes fit in the available space now.
Ooh.
As opposed to the weird spilling out and odd storage solutions that we've come up with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say all in all, it was a pretty successful,
successful
undertaking.
So Goodwill is going to have a lot of those downtown shirts then. Huh?
You know what? All the downtown shirts made the cut.
Because, oh,
you know why?
Because they sparked joy. Yes. That's the right answer. That's the right answer. Very good. Well, let's get right to it because you were a busy guy. Somehow you saw 4 movies this week.
4
weekend.
Movies.
Wow.
I'm not sure. This might be the first ever Pass the Popcorn quadruple feature. I'm not sure. It may have happened once before, but it was just, because of the nature of things, there were 3 movies that went into wide release at the box office. And then there was a new Netflix release, and it's, you know, I mean, it's the new Steven Soderbergh movie. So, I mean, obviously, I'm gonna check that out. How do you want to do this?
Oh, my gosh. You tell me. There's so many. Let's see. Let's go with, let's start. I want to save Lego Movie 2 for the end.
Okay.
Graham's pretty excited for that.
Sure.
So, let's start with What Men Want.
Okay. So we're all still relatively familiar with I think it was Nancy Myers who directed What Women Want with Mel Gibson, which came out in the year 2000. That movie's 20 years old.
Is that long?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I was astonished when I looked back and was like, oh, man. Yeah. No, that movie happened a long time ago. But, in retrospect, it's like, well, Mr. Gibson's been through several iterations since that movie came out. So I suppose the timeline makes sense. The tendency towards remakes, reboots, et cetera, it was only a matter of time before we got to this one. The idea of doing it as a gender swap makes sense. Like, I get it. Like, it certainly lends itself more readily to something like that than maybe some of the other efforts that we've seen in recent years. Taraji P. Henson stars as a sports agent. Yeah, a lot of sports stuff through this stretch. Stars as a sports agent named Allie, who works in Atlanta, works for this big agency. She's very successful, very hard-nosed. Struggling to become a partner at her agency, can't, you know, break the glass ceiling, as it were, struggles to deal with the sort of boys club mentality that surrounds the business. And so she, in the course of doing so, has a humiliating moment where she does not make partner. And so goes off to a bachelorette party to sort of drown her sorrows and whatnot. Winds up at a psychic reading because, you know, that's what happens at bachelorette parties, apparently. I'm not really familiar. And winds up drinking some funky tea while having her tarot read by a psychic named Simply Sister, played by Erykah Badu, which is, you know, that was a fun little
wow,
sort of
like
thing.
That.
And then she goes out clubbing, winds up getting wasted, hitting her head. And when she wakes up in the hospital, well, she can hear men's thoughts.
Okay.
And it pretty much goes from there. It's the story beats are very will ring very familiar. Like she uses her ability to read minds to work her way into the good graces of the consensus number 1 draft pick for the NBA, a young man by the name of Jamal, whose father is a Lorenzo Ball type who has changed his name to Joe Dalla, D-O-L-L-A, played, frankly, quite delightfully by Tracy Morgan.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds good.
Who's great. And then she also uses it in an effort to get closer to the bartender one night stand that she's decided maybe she wants to not be to be more than one night stand. And then we all learn something along the way, because it turns out knowing what's in someone's head, not as important as knowing what's in their heart, Rich.
I've heard that.
It's fine. Like, it's got some chuckles in it. It's a reasonably well-made movie. Taraji P. Henson's really talented. Like, she's a really good actress. And so it's nice to see her get any sort of vehicle. Granted, I wish it was maybe a little bit better realized than this one, but it's got a pretty good cast. You know, Max Greenfield is in this. Jason Jones, formerly of The Daily Show. And, Brian Bosworth is in this movie for some reason. As like the head of the agency. It's just like out of nowhere. And like, I was like, holy, like I literally said out loud, oh, it's the Boz. When I saw him and I don't believe anyone else in the theater knew who that person was. And I'm like, oh no, it's Stone Cold, man. Like that's Brian Bosworth. It's a good time. People will have a good time. As long as you don't go in with particularly high expectations, you'll do all right.
All right. That's number one. How about Cold Pursuit?
Look, I'm on record as being a huge fan of the whole old man action movie genre. And as we know, Liam Neeson is the king of said genre. So it's,
barely even in real life.
this movie, stop me if you heard this before, Rich. He's a regular guy with a regular job.
Yeah.
Something horrible
in an extraordinary situation
happens to someone he's close to, and he's going to exact revenge.
This is like deja vu.
He's a snowplow driver named Nels Coxman in the fictional ski town of Kehoe, Colorado. He lives in a weird cabin with his wife, Laura Dern. I don't remember the character. We're just going to call her Laura Dern. And his son, Kyle Coxman, who's they seem like they're a very relatively happy family. He's he works as a baggage handler at the local airport. But turns out the Kehoe Airport is the spot for some pretty shady goings on.
You knew it.
And Kyle's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, He winds up getting offed by some drug dealers. They kidnap him and like dose him with a fatal overdose of heroin, and then basically just leave him in Denver. Nels Coxman is called to identify the body, and they tell him heroin overdose. He's like, you know, Kyle wasn't a druggie, and his wife is like, you have to, you know, we didn't even know our own son. He's like, no, he wasn't. And everything starts falling apart for him. His wife leaves him.
Pretty soon, I bet all he's got is his snowplow.
Yeah, all he's got is his snowplow. And he decides that he's going to exact his revenge on the people who did this to his son, which he finds out inadvertently because the other guy who was actually involved with the drug smuggling operation is badly beaten but escapes and winds up holed up in the snowplow garage, the city works garage, where he stumbles on Nels Coxman, and who gives him the first name to allow him to start working his way up the drug dealer ladder. First name, by the way, Speedo. Just so you know.
All right, sure.
It turns out at the end of the rainbow, there's
his real name is Mr. Earl.
There's
old rock and roll fans there.
There's a high end drug dealer named Viking.
Okay.
Because of course.
Yeah.
Viking's too high up, so Nels Coxman needs help. Conveniently enough, his brother, played by William Forsythe, whose name I swear to God, Rich, is Brock Coxman. turns out he was a bit of a criminal back in the day, and so he helps Nels.
You know that's got to be a porn name somewhere. Come on.
He helps Nels figure out what he's going to do next, And yeah, and then there's just a tremendous, body count. And at one point, for reasons that I'm still not super clear on, the other drug dealing cohort in town, based you know, led by the Native Americans in the area, for reasons that, again, I'm not entirely clear. They get involved, and then just a lot of people die, Rich. Mm. Just so many people, like a lot of them. Nels Coxman kills, but some of them he doesn't.
Oh.
And there's this this great device where they basically do these sort of interstitial sort of title cards every time somebody dies, and they have a little cross, a little memorial, and then their name.
Oh.
And it's just like, oh yeah, no, that guy definitely just died. Wow. So there you go. It's a remake of a Norwegian film. Shocking.
Now it makes sense, Gary.
That it's comic in the way that you know, Norwegian film is comic, and so it's pretty pitch black, but it's funny. Like, I definitely laughed a lot more than I anticipated at Cold Pursuit. It's sort of absurd, but it's also kind of entertaining. And if you, like me, are a connoisseur of Liam Neeson taking revenge on stuff, then, yeah, you're going to have a good time with Cold Pursuit.
All right. How about High Flying Bird? I've not heard of this at all. Have you, Gary?
No.
No?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it did its debut screening at Slam Dance at the end of last month. But Netflix apparently got into business with Steven Soderbergh with his previous movie. Like, they basically were interested in Unsane. Which he wound up distributing himself, but he said no. But he's like, I have this other thing if you're interested, and they wound up buying it to distribute it. The thing I love about Soderbergh is his willingness to continue experimenting as he develops as a filmmaker,
well, especially in his retirement.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to make any more movies. Except, you know, I'm going to make a ton more movies. This one again. Much like Unsane, filmed exclusively on the iPhone, which is fascinating to me. The idea that he's turned it into a filmmaking tool is just so cool, and it's such a wonderful sort of illustration of how willing he is to take advantage of the benefits of advancing technology. The movie itself, it's like, leave it to Steven Soderbergh to make a sports movie that has hardly any sports in it. It's about this guy, Rex Burke, played by Andre Holland. It's another sports agent situation. But he works at this big agency, and we're in the midst of a pro basketball lockout, not an NBA lockout, because I assume there were trademark licensing right. issues and whatever. His client, Eric Scott, is a recent high draft pick of the New York franchise, but he hasn't played yet because of the lockout. He's having some money troubles because, you know, he's not getting paid because, you know, he signed his contract, but he's not receiving any money yet. And Ray starts to think that maybe there's something advantageous that could come from this lockout, because both sides are very much at an impasse. The owner's side is led by this guy, Sleeton, is his name, played by Kyle MacLachlan, who's great in this. He's not in it enough, but he's good. He basically starts to think that this might provide an opportunity for the players to sort of seize a little bit more of the decision-making power as far as professional sports is concerned. You know, he views his client's status, signed, unpaid, in the middle of a lockout, as sort of a loophole for him to maybe explore some other avenues that would place the onus of the lion's share of the profit back into the hands of the players. And so we basically watch as this sort of all develops, a plan that it seems at some times incredibly well-reasoned, and at other times sort of seat of the pants, and we just watch as it plays out. Yeah, it's undeniably a sports movie. It has the same sorts of beats that you would expect from a sports movie. Kind of the nearest comparison I can come up with is maybe something like Moneyball, But even that had you know, some game action in it. There's literally no game action in this movie. Like even when it threatens that like some actual basketball will start being played, Soderbergh cuts because, you know, he's cheeky like that. but yeah, it's an incredibly well made movie. The script is by Tyler Alvin McCreary, who did he wrote the play upon which Moonlight was based.
Oh wow!
And so it's, you know, so you've got a really talented writer with a really talented filmmaker. The cast that they've put together is really excellent, and it's a weird sort of game within the game kind of look. It's this glimpse behind the curtain, kind of a chance to see how the sausage is made almost. You know, I refer to it as you know, it's basically inside baseball, except it's basketball. Smart movie, well paced, well made, compelling as heck, and 90 minutes long.
Wow.
In and out. Like, nice. And that's what you like to see.
All right. Finally, wrapping up the quartet, Lego Movie 2. We're excited in the Kimball House.
And you know what? You should be.
Good.
It's a really fun it's a really fun movie. It's not quite as good as the first one. I think the lion's share of that difference comes from the fact that the reveal is lost, you know, because that was such a wonderful sort of connective moment at the end of the Lego movie when you pull the camera back and you get that perspective. You don't really get that as much in this one, obviously, because it's hard to come up with a surprise like that. But yeah, it's fun. It's basically the lion's share of the action takes place 5 years after the events of the Lego movie, which, you know, the Lego movie came out 5 years ago. So, things aren't going great for our friends at the beginning of this movie. Bricksburg is no more.
What?
It has been replaced by a sort of a Mad Maxian landscape called Apocalypseburg.
Okay.
Everyone has become dark and gritty. Lucy, the former Wild Style, voiced by Elizabeth Banks, spends her time staring off across the desert, brooding and talking to herself. Lego Batman, voiced by Will Arnett, has set himself up as a bit of a warlord. Benny the Spaceman, voiced by Charlie Day, and Metalbeard the Pirate, voiced by Nick Offerman. They're both in full dystopia mode. And then there's Emmett Brokowski, voiced by Chris Pratt. Literally nothing has changed about Emmett. He's still cheery and optimistic and strolling through his day, singing the tween remix of Everything is Awesome and generally enjoying his life, despite the fact that everything else seems to be crumbling around them. And that's where we're at. Until Captain Mayhem from the Systar system arrives, saying that they need to bring back the leader of Apocalypseburg in order to engage in a matrimonial event.
Ooh!
And so the captain takes the aforementioned. Along with, I forgot to mention Unikitty. Unikitty, voiced by Alison Brie, is still here. although Unikitty is now has now developed the ability to transform into a gigantic, rampaging robot war machine.
Ooh.
Because, you know, like you do. Lucy and Batman and Unikitty and Benny and Metalbeard get whisked off to the Systar system, leaving Emmett behind. And Emmett takes it upon himself to go save them. And so he builds a ship and takes off after them. They get taken to the system where they meet Queen Whatever Wannabe, voiced by Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, wow. Wow.
She's the queen, and she wants to marry someone. And in order to bring the two societies together, Lucy has her suspicions, but she does find someone suitable. I'm not going to tell you who. You'll You'll enjoy it when you get there.
Okay, thank you.
Meanwhile, Emmett is trying to make his way to the Sistar system and is in terrible, terrible danger until he's saved by the intervening of one Rex Danger Vest, a grizzled space-faring archaeologist slash dinosaur trainer who has stubble and cool hair and sounds an awful lot like Chris Pratt.
Oh, okay.
Rex Danger Vest takes Emmett under his wing and tries to help him toughen up to the point where he'll be able to go and rescue his friends from the impending dangers that real or perceived that the Sistar system presents.
Whoosh. Wow.
Yep. I'm not gonna go any farther than that because there's some fun stuff that happens along the way. It's a Lord and Miller script. Like, they didn't direct this one, but they wrote the screenplay, so the jokes are there, the pop culture references. It's a very meta movie, very self-aware in all the best ways. The vocal cast, of course, is outstanding.
Dave, anything as catchy as Everything is Awesome.
there's a song called Catchy Song.
Is it really?
Yeah, which is really good. It's a really good song. There's the Queen at one point sings a song called Not Evil.
Oh, okay.
Which is hysterical. And then stay for the early part of the credits because the folks from Lonely Island have teamed up with Beck. They've dropped a tune called Super Cool over the credits that is a delight, and when you realize what they're singing about, you'll be even more delighted.
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, it's top to bottom, it's super fun. Like, you'll have a great time. The kids in the screening that I saw really enjoyed it, except for one who at one point was just like he was like, I don't want to watch this anymore. And then his mom was like, okay, we don't have to watch this anymore. And he seemed very encouraged by that. And so he's like, I want a bicycle. I don't really know how that turned out because they were on their way out. But I was just like, oh man, yeah, go big or go home.
There you go.
But yeah, it's a delight. And you and the boy will have a great time.
Can't wait. Thanks, LA. Cornucopia of goodness.
So much stuff.